Hey, kids, you're listening to A Couple of Annoyed Grumpoys, and this is the 138th Simpsons Podcast.
Hoping for a dream.
Hoping.
Focus like a laser beam. I'll keep fighting till I want something red. Hoping for a dream.
That's right, we're the Simpsons Podcast that discusses the beloved animated sitcom of The Simpsons from seasons 11 and beyond, and the newest episodes when they air. Why do we do it this way? Well, an entity known as Wheel of Random has cursed us to only watch those episodes because there's plenty of other podcasts out there that have discussed the glorious age, that being seasons 1 through 10, so we're out to find if there's any episodes that can match those great episodes. And I don't do this alone. I'm just one annoyed grunt boy named Craig. With me, as always, is the other annoyed grunt boy.
Steve. Hello, Craig.
Steve, welcome. This is our new studio for the year 2024.
Oh, boy.
We realized that in podcasting, and this podcast in general, was missing something.
Yeah.
And it was lighting, Steve. This podcast didn't sound good because of the lighting issues, because we never thought we needed gels, and now we have gels.
Yeah, thanks to these gels, we can finally podcast our full potential because we do a pretty good job in this show. You know, we do our research. We, you know, try and be humorous. But really, our biggest problem is the fact that we were showing you this podcast in an audio format with only one colored light. We were just doing basic white light. But now we have a full spectrum of colors changing. And I think it'll really, really set us apart.
So if your podcast isn't doing that well, just go get gels. That's right. Go to your nearest guitar center and say the Annoyed Grunt Boys sent you to buy gels, and they'll give you a $25,000 discount.
That's right.
For a set of gels. Yeah.
Make sure
you say, Steve and Craig sent me here to buy gels. Get them now.
We have another sponsor. That's right. It's Zers, the appetite restaurant. You know, when you go to a restaurant, you know, you're tired of being bogged down by entrees. They're so heavy. And they're so, like, you get your meat and you're just like, it's too much. Really, you just need some fries, some wings, some potato skins, some edamame, some salt peas, if you will. And that's why we're proud to be sponsored by Zers. How could this possibly fail?
That sounds pretty good. I want some buffalo wings right now. Steve, how have you been this week?
I've been good. It's another week in paradise.
Can I talk about a different TV show real quick?
Sure, go right ahead.
It's going to be a recommendation, and I think this is going to be weird coming from a Simpsons podcast, but if you got the old peacock app, I highly recommend Seth MacFarlane. Yes, that's right, Family Guy himself. His new show, Ted. Yes, Ted on Peacock. I was skeptical because I'm not that big of a fan of the movies. The concept of the movie was funny, and then watching them, I'm like, oh, it's fine. Not a big Marky Mark fan over here. And Mila Kunis, who's in it, you know, no one likes her anymore.
True.
So I decided to watch the TV show, and the first episode, I'm like, it's okay. Then when it got into, like, I'm going to watch the second episode, and like, it got better. And I realized it's a live action cartoon sitcom. Like, it's a live action, almost like a live action Family Guy in a way. This also kind of feels like early Simpsons, too. But the acting and the characters is so well done. And it's just it's one of those, like, when I turn it on, I already have a smile before, like, anything happens. And there's a lot of, like, crude humor. But there's a lot of, like, redemption. It's like, you know how when you watch a sitcom back in the 80s or 90s, the villain of the week or, you know, whoever needs their comeuppance usually walks away in the episode with the tail between their legs, right? But this one gives the opportunity for your antagonist to redeem themselves. And then you, again, will feel bad for the antagonist of the episode. So, yes, there's a lot of, like, you know, not PC jokes or whatever in the show. And very blue-collar, but also it's very smart. I like Seth MacFarlane just fine. Like, I thought the Orville was way better Star Trek than what new Star Trek was doing when it came out. And Seth MacFarlane, you know, love him or hate him or whatever, we make fun of shows like that all the time. You know, we always, it's a Family Guy joke, but man's really talented, and he's coming from being a fan of 80s TV show and 80s and 90s TV shows. And this, like, yeah, just what he's doing with that show, like, I hope there's more. Like, I'm one of the few shows that I'm, like, very excited to watch. And, like, there's only, like, maybe 6 or 7 episodes, but I don't want to go through them that fast. It's how much, like, I'm trying to keep that moment, like, you don't feel like it'd be as good as it is. And that's what I'm trying to say. Like, of all the TV shows that, you know, sitcoms are that are on the air, like, it's a very solid one. So I'm giving my Craig approval for you Simpsons fans out there. If you're not watching it, watch Ted. I think you're all going to like it.
This is a very ringing endorsement from Craig. And while I do not currently or haven't watched Family Guy in a long time, nor have I watched American Dad or The Cleveland Show, I also think that Seth MacFarlane is a very talented individual, and he's a good writer. Like, he, even if it's not for you, I think that his sensibilities are very smart. And so, dear listeners, I invite you to take his advice, because I have not seen Ted either, but I'm going to do the same, and I'm going to report back next week what I thought of the show. So, and we want to hear from you. So this is going to be a thing that we can try out, because I'm going to review it, and I want you. We want to hear from you as well. So, next week,
yeah,
I'll have my TED Talk, and I want your TED Talk as well.
And then if we ever get a Patreon, we'll do each episode of TED.
Exactly.
It's a Patreon exclusive. All right. I'm just mostly excited that we're going to have content for our intro next week.
Exactly.
And not have to come up with stupid bits, mm-hmm. like the one we just did.
Exactly.
Which could have been cut out. We don't know.
Right.
All right, Steve. Let's just get on with this week's episode. We're going to be talking about Covercraft, of course, which aired in the old fun time of November 23rd, 2014. Mm. Steve, what was the number one movie in the box office?
Well, I do make you a sponsor, because we were going, the number one movie in the box office was The Hunger Games: Mockingjay Part 1.
I don't know if I saw the original Hunger Games, the first one, mm-hmm. probably the second one, but I don't know if I ever finished the movie. This was like when they had the last book. It was always like one book. So like, but the movies, the studio's like, well, we got to drag the last book into two movies.
Right.
Or in Peter Jackson's term, we need three movies for one 293-page book called The Hobbit.
Yeah, exactly.
All three movies will be 3 hours long. But yeah, I'm not a really Hunger Games fan. And I know there, as of this record, there's that new one, like the prequel that came out a few months ago.
Yeah.
It's YA audience, right? Even though I do like the Harry Potters. But, you know, that was the last YA thing that I was into. Because, you know, when the Harry Potter books did come out, we were like early teens. Or no, late teens when those came out. But early 20s. But yeah, so The Hunger Games didn't really appeal to me. How about you?
I've never got into them. I think that you're right. Had I been like 12 or 13 when they came out, I do love dystopia. And it seems like a fun concept, but I've never really been into them. It could be my aversion to Jennifer Lawrence. It could be a lot of things. But so I don't know much about it, but I know that they're very popular. I know this movie is supposed to be very good. So yeah, I think that for some people, it's probably great.
Now, your wife is YA. Was she a fan of the Hunger Games books or movies?
She read the first couple ones. She saw the movie, and she thought the whole affair was fine. Not amazing. She wasn't blown away. She was a very big Harry Potter fan, and I think that this kind of was a little lackluster in comparison.
Oh, okay. Well, there we are. Fans, we don't need to know what you think about Hunger Games.
Yeah.
So don't email us about that.
But Craig, while we were not watching Hunger Games, what were we listening to?
Well, I'll let you know, Steve. I was listening to the number one song of the Billboard Hot 100. It was a little song called Shake It Off by Taylor Swift.
Ooh.
Now, I know these ones, Steve. I did the research. Okay. Because I've been asking you this whole last couple weeks. But I did the research myself.
Good job.
And I know what the number one hot rock alternative song was. Hozier's Take Me to Church. And it's a fun song.
Mm-hmm.
And I happen to know that the country number one country Hot 100 song was a little lady known as Carrie Underwood with Something in the Water. We all love a Carrie Underwood, right?
Mm-hmm. Better than Carrie Over Metal.
Okay, if she ever does a metal album, that should be her name, Carrie Over Metal. And as we all know, the number one hot dance electric hot song was Blame by Calvin Harris featuring John Newman.
I think we've discussed it before, but...
Are you wearing your Calvins?
Oh, every day. Nothing good becomes between me and my Calvins, but...
And I'm wearing my Newmans.
Newman?
Dumb.
I don't know much about electronic music, but Calvin Harris and John Newman do not sound like electrical artists. They sound like electricians.
Let's see, like John Newman sounds like he should be like a film composer, like, ooh, the score's by John Newman.
Exactly, yeah.
And Calvin Harris, yeah, sounds like he should be selling me insurance or, like, running for a comptroller, you know,
exactly,
in my town.
I don't like Harris's policy on infrastructure. Yeah, that sounds right. Not like, how about this hot new track from Calvin Harris?
A bunch of dorks. Well, although like that electronic music, I think, you know, made on computers by computer nerds, right?
So at least they're true.
They're kind of totally dorky names, but they're Steve. They're kissing more boys than we will ever kiss.
That's right. They're the regular Gore Vidals of the. of the electronic music industry.
All right, Steve. Hey, let's just get on to this week's episode entitled Covercraft. A midlife crisis has Homer taking up bass guitar and forming a cover band with other dads, but the band's success is threatened by the breakout potential of one of its members.
Ooh.
Steve, let's go ahead and listen to all those top songs at once and then come back and discuss the episode.
Sounds great.
We'll be right back.
When I close my eyes, I wish that I could fantasize. Pull a dream right out of the air. Take a chance, turn it into a prayer. Girl, you know I wanna be the guy with the hunger burning deep inside. Tonight I wish upon.
And we're back. Today we're talking about Covercraft. It is the 8th episode of the 26th season, originally aired November 23rd, 2014. It's episode 560 in the show's run. Your nerd code is TABFO2, written by Matt Selman, directed by Stephen D. Moore. Your showrunners are Al Jean and Matt Selman.
Ah, yes, Matt Selman. He's written 30 episodes of The Simpsons, as well as a contributing writer in the movie. And so far, we have reviewed 13 episodes of his. We have got Trilogy of Air, Simpsons Tall Tales, Jaws Wired Shut, Husbands and Knives, That 90s Show, Bart Gets a Z, Flaming Moe, The Day the Earth Stood Cool, Gorgeous Grandpa, Sky Police, The Great Gatsby Part 2, and he also helped out in the Treehouse of Horror 33 as Splat Spellman.
Yeah, Matt's up there as one of the Mount Rushmore of modern age Simpsons, I would say.
Yeah, I would say so. He's kind of like the Bill Oakley of today.
Oh, great. What, she's going to start reviewing fast food on his Instagram now?
Mm-hmm.
You know, remember that there's three episodes that we can never review because of our silly structure of the show. And that's Season 9, Episode 25, Natural Born Kissers; Season 10, Episode 18, Simpsons Bible Stories; and Season 10's Episode 22, They Saved Lisa's Brain. Now, remember that misogynistic game F, Mary, Kill, Steve?
Yes, I do.
Let's F, Mary, Kill those three episodes. If you can remember, Natural Born Kissers,
wow. Okay.
Simpsons Bible Stories, and They Saved Lisa's Brain.
Yeah, this is a no-brainer, pardon the words, for me. So They Saved Lisa's Brain, I think, if that's the one I'm thinking of, is the one that Lisa is worried about getting the Simpsons gene about how she's getting dumber because she can't solve that one really simple word problem, number problem.
I'm going to stop you here. No. Lisa is inducted into Springfield's Mensa Society after penning an inspiring letter over Springfield's complete humiliation at the hands of her father. Meanwhile, physicist Stephen Hawking comes to town. Yeah.
Okay. Well, then, that changes my answer a little bit.
The, what episode is that you described? I remember that one.
Yeah, that one might be like season 8 or 9.
All right. Well, so that's that one. Natural Born Kissers.
Is that the one where Homer and Marge are in a sexual rut, so they get the Paul Harvey book on tape about having sex, and they become nudists, and they fuck in public, and then they lose their clothes and have to like walk around Springfield naked.
I don't know if they become nudists.
No, but they
are naked. Well, yeah, because Marge and Homer celebrate their 11th anniversary. It's funny because it's the 11th season of The Simpsons, too. But find that their sexual spark is gone. Yeah, I think that's the episode. Meanwhile, Bart and Lisa go treasure hunting to find an alternative ending to a classic film.
Oh, yeah, the Casablanca ending.
Yeah. All right, so now you know, and then The Simpsons Bible Stories is stories from the Bible. The first segment is Marge's dream, where it's Adam and Eve in Garden of Eden. Then Lisa's dream, because they're in church and they're all falling asleep from the sermon, and it's the first one's Marge's dream. And then Lisa's dream is all the kids are the Israelites in Egypt building the pyramids, you know, the Moses story. And Homer's dream is he's King Solomon. And there's actually four stories. There's Bart's dream, which is, yeah, David versus Goliath. All right, got that all out of the way, Steve. Now, F, Mary, kill.
Okay, so for me, I think I am going to fuck the Save Lisa's Brain, kill the Bible stories, and marry natural born kissers.
All right. I am going to be controversial here, I think.
Ooh.
I think I'm going to fuck natural born kissers. I'm sorry, F, natural born kissers.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to kill They Saved Lisa's Brain, and I'm going to marry Simpsons Bible Stories.
I mean, that is appropriate because the natural born kissers does have a lot of sex in it, so it makes sense to F it. And, you know, marriage is basically a relationship with God more than your partner, because you're, like, allowing him into your life. So that makes sense that it'd be the Bible stories.
Well, Simpsons Bible Stories was on the other day, and I kind of just sat down like, I'm going to watch it. And I laughed quite a few times. I thought I had a lot of fun with it. We talk about how much we don't like it on this podcast. I recommend going back and watching it. There's some fun stuff. Because I feel like a lot of like the other later seasons that do, you know, anthology stories, minus Treehouse of Horror. But like this one does a fairly good job.
Okay.
Because I actually do like Bart's David versus Goliath. I think that's kind of funny.
Yeah, because it was a whole kind of action movie.
Yeah.
And, scenario,
and,
right? Yeah.
And Lisa's segment with the pharaohs and the Moses, I thought was great too. So, but I mean, it's not great. I can't say because, you know, that we can never review those episodes.
It's true, but maybe I'll have to check it out on my own time.
If we ever get a Patreon, we could talk to Matt Salmon about it, right?
Mm-hmm. And be like, what the fuck?
Although that episode he co-wrote with Tim Long and Larry Doyle, so we'd have to get all three of those guys.
Wow.
But Tim Long would never do this podcast because he hates us.
He made fun of his name too many times. Tim.
All right. Well, let's get on with this week's episode. Steve, we have a couch gag. And this one should be... everyone should know what this is like because we're all stuck on our devices. Always looking down, yeah. Never looking up. But each member of the family walks in and, again, just looking at their phones. And they all bump into each other and fall to the ground while still on the ground looking at their phones. It's very fun. That's
very true to life, too.
That's going to be the new one. The eventually, the Simpsons couch guy would be all those new Apple VR goggles that people are going to be walking around with those so they can bump into each other and fall down and keep watching their walking down the street, watching porn. That's what everyone's going to be doing now, right?
I think that we're going to like just fast forward to, WALL-E Idiocracy in like a matter of like 5 years.
That
so we're all just gonna be fat idiots
and a little bit of
masturbating and doing whatever we do.
Ready Player One. I mean, that's already what it is. That's the goggles and Ready Player One. We just have to have the treadmill that we're strapped into, so we're not like actually falling over, walking into things. And that's what it's gonna be in 5 years when we're almost done with this podcast. We'll be recording with our goggles. Like, we'll be sitting in the same room, but, like, not actually in the same room. But I'll be able to see you, like, an actual studio.
Right, right.
And our VR studio is going to look like Mark Maron's garage.
Lock the gates.
and then people will, like, because it'll be recorded, and then people will, like, just sit down, like, in the room with us. Like, our recording of it. And they'll realize, like, oh, they don't wear pants. Yeah.
Why,
I'm not going to wear pants when I'm recording a podcast. That's why they call it a... They don't call it a pants cast.
No.
Should we just begin the episode proper, Steve?
Yeah, let's do that. Okay. Our episode begins, as it always does, on an early morning in Springfield. Mo uses a passed out Barney to prop open the back door of his tavern to take out the trash. He then sees his neighbor, King Toot, of the King Toot's music store, dumping accordions, a trombone, a snare drum, and other musical instruments into Moe's dumpster while humming a surprisingly catchy tune. And so Moe confronts the music store owner.
How many times I gotta tell you not to throw your trash in my dumpster?
Oh, come on, Sizzlack. I gotta make space in the store for my new side business, a tanning salon that secretly has cameras in the beds, which feeds into my website, www.tancams.com. That is registered.
Hey, sounds great. Maybe then you could afford to rent your own dumpster.
I like my current deal. Free of charge.
Oh, I'll eat your head.
You call that a testicle kick?
All right, you two, break it up.
Drive on, asphalt cowboy, or I'll squeeze his brain out like an edamame.
A what?
Those beans you eat before your sushi comes.
Oh, salt peas. I call them salt peas.
Look, officer, after 20 years of being neighbors, tempers sometimes flare up. Moe's a good guy.
No, it's my fault. I'm a hothead. I ain't got no beef with you, Toot. You better stay out of my dumpster.
I've also been stealing the catalogs out of your mailbox.
Yes, of course, that voice of King Toot is none other than Star of Nebraska. No, not Bruce Dern, but Will Forte. Will Forte. We've seen him on this podcast, at least, when he made an appearance as King Toot in Top Goon from season 34. He was also in season 30's Woohoo Done It. But now, Steve, I vaguely remember when Lisa's Pony or like Lisa Sachs, like we've seen King Toot before, like where he comes into Moe's because he wants to buy like the reed, right? He doesn't get the reed for Lisa.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't he like a skinny guy with almost looks like Milhouse with like a mustache?
Yes, it is kind of like Milhouse with a Hitler mustache, but that is actually a man named Jer, who seems to be the previous manager slash owner of King Toot's before the titular King Toot took over the store.
So he was just an employee?
Yeah, I guess.
Is that what they're called?
Employee. Yeah, okay. Yeah, I guess so.
I guess that makes sense. All right, I just thought maybe he got a little bit bigger and lost a little bit of hair and got some contacts or...
Completely changed his appearance.
Yeah. That's a look. He's got like, kind of looks like a members only jacket and then wearing a button down collar shirt, but like just the last button on the bottom of the shirt tucked in.
Yeah. He's got a tuft of chest hair, big chain.
And like
a classic dirt bag.
Yeah. It's like he's just throwing away musical instruments. Like that trombone looks pretty usable.
It is funny that, you know, a music store would have to throw music instruments out at all.
It's very funny, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And then Wiggum's funny there.
Yeah, salt peas.
Are you a fan of edamame? Like when you're at the sushi store, are you getting edamame?
I like it fine. It's not like I don't go crazy for it, but it's a fun appetizer.
Like, do you do conveyor belt sushis often, or are you just more like you go to the fancier ones where you have to order the plates?
We do a little bit of both. We get a lot of takeout sushi, which is mostly from conveyor belt type places, but we just order it online. We've gone out to fancy sushi places, but most of the time we just get kind of mid to lower grade sushi because it's fine.
I love a conveyor belt sushi place.
Mm-hmm.
We've probably talked about on the podcast before, but you know, plates now are like $3 to $5. You know, back in the day when it was like $1.50, it felt like you were getting money's worth. So now, like
right. The
edamame, like. I'm like, even if it's like a green plate, which is like the cheap one or the yellow, you know, whatever the cheapest one is, I'm not wasting that couple bucks on edamame.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, I don't need it. Just give me some salmon.
Mm-hmm. It's the breadstick or the bread basket of sushi restaurants.
Right.
You don't want to fill up on edamame.
No, those and like the sesame balls and the stay away. I don't need you. Although.
I love the sesame balls, though.
Well, I was going to say, I'm kind of a sucker for goizas. Like, I love a hot sticker. And if they all of a sudden just, like, put out some fried, like, right from the fryer, like, fresh ones, like, oh, fuck you.
So, yeah, those are hard to put down. Like, you can eat so many of them.
The only thing I avoid at the sushi conveyor belt is anything with cream cheese. I'm not a big cream cheese fan in general. Mm-hmm. But every time I've always had, like, a cream cheese something sushi, my tummy hurts. And I just always wonder, like, maybe the cream cheese rolls have been left out too long.
It is a little weird because cream cheese is definitely not, like, a traditional thing. Like, it's definitely trying to appeal to the American crowd because, like, I don't think they're having Philly rolls over in Japan.
You don't think they are?
Probably not.
Okay. Yeah, no, I'm not. No Philly rolls for me. I'll keep
it. You know who had a great Philly roll?
Mm.
Tom Hanks.
He was great in that movie.
Yeah, the great Philly roll. All right.
Back to the Simpsons, where we'll probably discuss some food later on. So keep your appetites tighten. Appetites tighten. Like tighten up. I don't know. Anyways, so Mo and King Toot engage in some fisticuffs in the music store until a cello and a tuba are thrown out the window. Toot slams Mo's face into a tanning bed, and Mo kicks King Toot in another tanning bed, using a soprano saxophone to lock him inside. So as Mo leaves, he shouts that it is his dumpster, and then knocks over a harp and uses a banjo to smash several guitars. And Mo and King Toot, whose face is now tanned bright red, are both arrested, and King Toot's music store is temporarily closed for repairs. You know how a lot of episodes of The Simpsons, like the Act 1, a lot of times the plot doesn't really have to do with what happens in the first seconds? This one does. I'm on board right now because this obviously plays into the whole plot of this episode.
Yeah, I'm excited to see what happens. Mm-hmm. This is a great opening. So later, Homer and Lisa are walking down the street as Homer is telling Lisa the terrifying tale of how the Quebec Nordiques became the Colorado Avalanche, which is such a great dorky hockey thing.
But it's just a non sequitur joke of like just the imagining. How did this conversation come up? And these are some of my favorite bits that they do on The Simpsons. And the terrified. Like, I wanted to be like the next thing Homer should have said. All right. And the next tale I will tell you is how the Hartford Whalers became the Carolina Hurricanes or something like that.
Both of which are a shame because those are two of the greatest logos, in my opinion, both the Whalers and the Nordiques.
Yeah.
And so the fact that they're not around, it's a shame.
It's also a shame that, yeah, well, Hartford was, like, you know, it was big. Like, the Whalers. Especially when you have, like, a smaller, like, city like that, like Hartford. Like, they gotta have something.
Yeah.
And they did. And Carolina, even though, like, they're a good team, but...
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, yeah, Colorado had the Flames.
Oh, yeah.
Because didn't go Atlanta, Colorado, then Calgary.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was that way around. Or yeah, I think that it started. Anyways, we're not here talking stick, Steve.
Nope, no. But the Hartford Whalers were Bob Marley's favorite band, so our favorite hockey team. So Homer and Lisa arrive at King Tooth to find it closed, meaning they'll have to go to a big box music store. So they arrive at kind of like a strip mall full of capitalist monstrosities such as
Sprawl Mart, still not a parody of Walmart.
Just Linens, etc.
Toys be this, babies be this.
Pets and lamps.
And Guitar Central, where dreams become purchases. After Homer tells Lisa to once again bow down to their corporate overlords, they enter the large music store, which Homer finds to be some kind of guitar center. Lisa examines the small woodwind selection while Homer checks out the guitars. And that is the case, like, when you go into Guitar Central. It's a music store, but there is, like, a rack of every other instrument ever.
Yeah.
Next to like a kid's like gumball machine.
And then like a kazoo.
Yeah. There's more kazoos than there are like actual woodwinds. Yeah.
Right.
So the Guitar Central employee clocks Homer as a potential easy sell and pounce on his opportunity.
Midlife crisis at 12 o'clock. Mm-hmm.
Okay, let me guess, dude. You're an axe man. You're looking to score a new blade.
Stig. You've got a name that's not a name.
So what's your poison, bro? Les Paul, straight up Gibson? No. Classic Strat, am I right?
Oh, I don't have what it takes to play guitar. I mean, I'm no Joe Walsh in the brains department.
Who is? Look, you don't have the weak, womanly fingers of a guitar princess. You, my friend, have the muscular stumps of a bass man. Try this on.
What the rock?
Now that was a lick.
I did a lick?
Keep 'em coming. Yeah, Yes, now bob your head.
Bob it, bob it, bob it.
Dude, usually it takes years to learn such neck confidence.
The joke of Joe Walsh, like the brains of Joe Walsh. Man did a lot of drugs back in the day, and somehow he's still alive and sober.
Yeah, it's wild.
I mean, he's probably been sober for like 30 years now, 20, 30 years, I would assume.
I have a weird memory of him on the Drew Carey show. Clearly messed up.
Like he, was he not recurring, but he was on a couple times. Like he was at the Drew's brother and Mimi when like the wedding, right?
Yeah, he was. Yeah. Because I think they also had a band and they had auditions. Because I remember Joey Ramone was also, he tried out as well. And RIP, yeah.
Do I talk about my love-hate relationship with music stores?
I was hoping you would, yeah.
I could diddle on the guitar. Is that what they say? Diddle?
Sure.
No, like, I've played guitar since I was, I want to say, 10. I took guitar lessons. I also played, you know, brass instruments in high school. Like pretty much after high school, I didn't play any more brass. But, you know, I still pick up the old axe and strum around. And I couldn't perform in a show. I don't, like, practice every day. I definitely could not perform in front of a crowd at this point.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't like going to music stores. One, I love looking at guitars. Guitars are just very beautiful.
They are.
They're just a piece of art. I used to have a huge collection of electric guitars until one day someone broke into my apartment and stole every single one except for one guitar, which oddly enough was my most expensive guitar, which thank God they didn't steal that one.
Yeah.
So that's like my only electric guitar now. And it's a Gibson, by the way. just this or Stig, if you want to know if I was a Gibson guy or a Fender guy, right? Anyways, what I was trying to get to is I like to pick it up, but I also don't want to play because there's people around that, like, I feel like they're going to judge me by like my skills, which isn't that great. I said I've been playing since I'm 10 and I'm 41. That doesn't mean I've put in my 10,000 hours or whatever Malcolm Gladwell style. You think I should be like Van Halen or Eddie Van Halen over here, but no, I'm not. So yeah, I think that going to like guitar centers, I know how to play. I just want to look at it. I'll maybe play a scale. I'm like, all right, yeah, that's what it sounds like. But let me just like sit at home and play with myself. And then I'll play guitar.
Sure.
So this whole scene is just reminds me of, and like the whole layout, everything just was well done. Looks like Guitar Center.
Yeah. And much like Homer, I played the bass for a little bit in my late teens and early 20s because I don't have talent. So I decided to become a bassist. But yeah, I know what you're saying, because I was always scared to even like buy strings because I'd be worried about like, oh, the cool guitar guys are going to make fun of me for like trying to get the wrong string or something.
It's like when you're in a similar way of like when you're an adult and you're going through like the toy aisle at Sprawl Mart, like I'm shopping for my nephew. I'm not really looking up. What are the G.I. Joes look like these days?
Exactly.
I think if I were to tell my 10-year-old self, I'm like, guitars are really fucking cool, but ask your parents to get drumming lessons, because if you could play drums or bass, like you could pretty much have like gigs at every local band.
You are so right. I so wish that I had played the drums, because
me too.
It would have just been so much more fun, and you could have actually gotten jobs because everybody would be a guitarist. So yeah.
Yep. But here's my guitar. Like, I don't want to be lead guitar. I just want to be rhythm. I just like, you know, which is essentially, that is the rhythm guitar is percussion. So,
because
you're keeping the beat. But Homer gets to live our fantasy, right?
So, that's right.
And then Homer plucks away on the bass. So Homer thinks that he is naturally an amazing musician, and Stig tells him that he's already one of the greatest bass players of all time. I also think it's funny because Stig just wants to like jam on the guitar. So he's just telling this customer to play bass.
Yeah.
He doesn't want anyone else playing the guitar. Stig kind of looks like me when I have long hair, doesn't it?
Kind of does, yeah.
Okay. At the counter, Homer is loaded up with all sorts of gear, such as cases, amps, headphones, bass strings, a microphone stand with a bandana tied around it, a Michael Anthony biography, and a Michael Anthony autobiography. Stig asks Homer about stage lights, and Homer embarrassingly admits that he hasn't even thought about the gels.
Oh, God, you got to think about the gels.
Really funny.
So back at 742 Evergreen Terrace, Marge is changing Maggie's diaper when thumping bass notes vibrate. nearly knocking Maggie off the changing table. Bart and Milhouse's game of Stacko, not Jenga, is nearly ruined by the bass sounds, but luckily, the tower of wooden blocks remains unhurt, but unfortunately, a nearby bookcase falls and smashes Milhouse, presumably to death.
Which is like a very cartoony thing with like his nose sticking out.
Yeah, it's just his nose and his fingers sticking out. Yeah,
very Looney Tunes-y. Well, in the garage, Homer plays his bass as Bart and Lisa watch, and Marge pops her head in asking what the racket is, and Homer replies that it's music, beautiful music. Marge feels that bass doesn't really feel like Homer's thing, but Homer explains that he's always loved laying things down, and grooves are just the latest. Marge groans in frustration, but Homer tells her that he feels a strong connection to the history of famous bassists, such as, what's his name, from The Goon, which is a John Entwistle, and the guy from Led Zeppelin, who wasn't Page, Plant, or Bottom. It was John Paul Jones. Those are the only two bassists that Homer knows for sure. Feel bad for Les Claypool not getting a mention.
Yeah.
Lisa is delighted to have another musician in the family. Though, you know, of course, we know Bart plays the drums and played the guitar for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Homer comments that his favorite thing about music is how easy it is, but Lisa says that it takes years to truly master an instrument, but Homer just says that's not so easy.
Again, that's bass for you. So Homer practices, causing the whole house to shake. Marge uses pillows to capture family portraits that are falling from the walls due to the vibration. Later, Homer is practicing while driving, plugging his amp into the car's cigarette lighter, steering with his knee. Lou the cop drives next to him with the siren blaring, so Homer speeds up and picks up the tempo of his plucking. Lou brings Homer home with one half of a pair of handcuffs around his wrist and the other around the neck of the bass. And then later, as Marge gets ready for a night out, Homer sits on the edge of the bed playing his bass, causing Marge to turn her earrings into a lip and nose ring.
It's like she's already a cool rock star chick.
That's
you know?
Right, yeah.
Or, you know, like, she'd be like Homer's, like, cool manic pixie girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, let's bring up the fact that, okay, Homer's been in a barbershop quartet. He also can play piano.
He went to rock and roll camp.
Yeah. Whoever wanted to play guitar and not bass. We haven't reviewed that episode yet, have we? No. Not How I Spent My Strummer Vacation?
No.
Not yet. And yeah, like Lisa could be jammed with him and Bart. Like we said all the things, but there's just kind of, and he's been, you know, in a grunge band too, wasn't he? Oh, no, he was singing in Sagasm, right? He didn't play an instrument.
Right. Yeah. He's a singer.
Yeah.
I think
he was. Yeah. He was the singer.
Mm-hmm.
But so far, I think I'm enjoying this one a little bit more than the 90s show or.
Agreed.
Yeah. And yeah, there's a lot of like inconsistencies. Like, why did they bring this up? But this is beginning to be kind of fun. So at the table, Homer plays up the scale, causing Bartley's dinner plates to wobble down the table. And then he continues to play. Then all of a sudden, like, it's like a conveyor belt, but out of nowhere, two of Marge's most awful creations, like a food that she ever does, sundaes. But the kids seem to actually be happy. So maybe.
Yeah. Maybe she got better.
Maybe those aren't Marge's sundaes. Homer based those into existence.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why they're happy about it. Because if you look at the table, there's no sundaes on it, but all of a sudden they show up. It's very funny. Again, a dumb joke, but I laughed. I liked it.
Mm-hmm.
Marge angrily leaves the table and heads to Zur's, America's all appetizer restaurant, which has a sign in the window that asks, how can this concept possibly fail? And Steve, I swear on this podcast, we've talked about why isn't there an all appetizer restaurant?
Yeah.
I didn't know that was The Simpsons made that reference. But seriously, that is the best idea for a restaurant.
Yeah, I mean, we on and off pod have talked about a lot of different restaurant ideas, you know, for food carts, for bars, for whatever. But Zur's is a solid idea that I would proudly stand behind because apps are the best. And that's usually all I want if I go to a chain restaurant.
Yeah.
I'm all on board. Yeah.
And we brought up sushi earlier and talked about conveyor belt sushi. I still think my ultimate idea for a restaurant is a conveyor belt sushi place, but it just serves apps. So you sit down at the counter and apps go by like, oh, there's a couple chicken wings. Oh, there's some mozzarella sticks. You know,
that's great.
I mean, that's the dream. Like all American apps, sushi conveyor belt.
Well, and what's brilliant is you don't have to commit to one big app because you could have smaller plates.
Exactly.
And so that you could have like two wings, tapas, yeah.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, tapas bars are really popular because they're kind of like an app store.
Mm-hmm.
I read like app, not apps, app restaurant.
Right.
I mean, I prefer topless restaurants, but tapas is okay to me.
Topless tapa.
Oh, boy. How could that concept possibly fail, right?
Exactly.
Just like they say at Zers. So let's go inside Zers there with Marge seeking solace with her friends Helen Lovejoy, Bernice Hibbert, Luann Van Houten, and Manjula Nahasapita Petalon. They're having some similar issues with their men.
I can't take it. All Homer does is play that stupid bass. Doink, 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 doink.
You're not alone, Marge.
A man gets older, has a career, a few kids, and suddenly there's a hole in his life that can only be filled by jamming. For my Julius, it was the drums.
Timothy has that awful guitar. Kirk just loves his keyboards.
I never knew so many women suffered from extramarital jamming. Oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God. What if all the dads jammed together in a dad band?
That way they would play their horrible music in one garage at a time. Marge, you're a genius.
This menu was right. Good things do happen at Zers.
Zers!
The joke at the end with the title card coming on.
Mm-hmm.
Seems kind of Family Guy-y, but
yeah.
I think it was okay because it's another joke callback. Or we'll have coming up.
Yeah.
I know we've talked about it enough, but let's look at their Zers platter real quick.
Okay.
It looks like we got some like pigs in a blanket, some potato skins.
I see some calamari.
There's their egg rolls, maybe.
Maybe because like I'm looking at the plate in the center, and there's like the little, round little butthole things at about 11 o'clock. I think those are calamari.
But there's like a couple things with sticks in them. Is that like maybe there's some wings? I don't know.
Sweet.
Looks good though. That's what I want. But it also looks like the that's calamari. Okay, I say at 12 o'clock. At first I thought, are those sushi rolls? But yeah, I think it's the calamari. Yeah. Yum yum.
Yum yum. Yeah, I'd eat all of that. Because all you really need is a deep fryer too, which is great.
Right. But I like this Luann just like, oh, they could all play their crappy music at garages, you know. They'll have to get together to do this. Look, last week we talked about who would be in the band. And did you cheat? Because I think you got all the people right, didn't you?
I think collectively we got them all right. I don't know if our instrument assignments were correct.
No. Well, we only did four people as well. We didn't know there would be five. Well, eventually.
Yeah. But yeah, I think we did pretty good with our guessing because, yeah, we got...
Well, no one said Lovejoy. I don't think you...
I don't think so. No.
But we knew Kirk and Hibbert and Apu would eventually be in it.
Mm-hmm.
I was hoping for Kearney, and you were hoping for Wiggum, but no.
Yeah. I love Marge complaining and her just saying doink. It makes me laugh.
The beginning of the... Yeah.
Doink, 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 doink. So, in the Simpsons garage, Homer is unsure about the new band arrangement of Kirk, Lovejoy, and Dr. Hibbert, and himself, saying that the bass is, you know, kind of known as being a solo instrument. Kirk thinks their collective wives may have missed the mark putting them together, assuming that they won't even like the same tunes. Hibbert suggests that on the count of three, all the men say their favorite kind of music, and so on three, all four dads say, in unison, hard-driving rock. So they begin to play, and instantly, they find a groove. Kirk shouts out that garage bands rule, and Homer remembers a very important detail. The gels! So he flips several switches, and the band is illuminated by a multicolored light display. We then get a, much like the Zers ad, an ad for rock light gels. Feel the tint. So after a great practice, they commit to another 6 hours of playing when they receive a visitor.
Excuse me, but my wife told me about your Get Out of the House band, and perhaps you need a singer.
Oh, yeah, Apu, I'm sure you're a great singer, but the balance of the band is really delicate right now, and we're not really looking for a world music vibe. No disrespect to world music. I love world music.
No, I will sing the classic power ballad, Hoping for a Dream, by my favorite band from the 1980s, Sun Gazer. Okay, here we go.
When I close my eyes, I wish that I could fantasize Pull a dream right out of the air. Take a chance, turn it into a prayer.
That sounds nothing like terrible, terrible world music.
Why is your voice different when you sing?
It is because of all the years I spent at the Quickie Mart.
This concept is, I believe, don't quote me, I didn't do any research, but it would be based on the singer Arnel Pineda, who is a Filipino man who was singing in bands growing up. And after Steve Perry, the lead singer of the band Journey, left the band, Journey was like, well, we need a new singer. And they saw this guy like on the internet singing just like Steve Perry would. And they're like, oh, you could be our new lead singer. So it's, yeah, so this is kind of like, you know, you're assuming that Apu coming in is just going to sound like Apu's accent. Mm-hmm. But yeah, good for Journey finding Pineda. Just imagine, like, he was covering songs like, you know, Journey, Aerosmith, Zeppelin, Eagles. Like, all of a sudden, like, yeah, that, I mean, it's like they went to a karaoke bar and it's like, hey, that guy can sing our songs. Do you want a job? Like, just imagine, like, your life changes right there.
Yeah.
And he sounds, you know, exactly, you know, like he should, like when you hear the actual Journey album. So I think it's kind of cool. It's not like Adam Lambert, you know, lead vocal, like, you know, doing lead singing for Queen, because it sounds like Adam Lambert. It doesn't sound like Freddie Mercury. Exactly. But this guy, Pineda, sounds like he's Steve Perry. Yeah. So that's what this reference is about Apu.
And I also Homer and the rest of them are just a little racist.
Yeah.
Being like, ew, world music, gross.
Well, as someone who used to work in a world-type import-export store, did you have to listen to lots of world music?
You would think so, but when I worked at that store, we were only allowed to listen to 3 CDs, only 3, and they were Portishead, which was fine.
Yeah.
The jazz artist Medeski Martin Wood, who I actually really like, and Sting. And it was the... very Eastern inspired Sting album, which happened to be the store owner's favorite. So that we'd listen to for about 6 hours a day. And it was awful.
Was it so annoying listening to that Sting album that you wanted to call the police?
So Apu goes on to explain that classic rock anthems were piped into the convenience store on a never ending loop. And I have to say that as somebody who's worked a lot of retail jobs, especially in the food service industry, that is incredibly true that, you know, your local classic rock radio station is the easiest win to play something that will not offend anybody. And it's pretty benign. Like, music from the 70s, 80s, especially like the rock and pop hits, you know, you can listen to them almost nonstop and you don't get upset with it. You just kind of, it becomes background noise. So I think it's a good choice. But the endless repetition did drive some clerks to madness, because we see one such employee sorting a giant pile of scratch off lotto ticket dust. But Apu, however, maintained his sanity by singing along until his voice was unified with the one on the radio. So Apu continues to sing the Sun Gazer hit with his new band, and Homer asks his bandmates if they're feeling it. And they definitely are. They are more than a garage band desperate to do anything other than hang out with their families. They are now a cover band. Homer names them Covercraft, since they play covers and that is their craft. And Hibbert adds that the name sounds like Hovercraft, but Homer says that was not his intent.
And didn't you make a joke last week, too, the same Hovercraft joke? Like, when we were trying to figure out the episode?
I think so, yeah.
I think you were just cheating and or you watched the episode.
This is my first time seeing it, and I gotta say, it's been fun so far.
All right. Well, the headliner at the Springfield Shopper reads, Zers files for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection. Concept deeply flawed. It's not! Matt Selman, we have to, if we do this, Zers, we have to have Matt Selman come on opening night.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll have Bill Oakley ask him for us.
And then Bill Oakley can review the restaurant, too.
Like, yeah, don't go. Anyways, and in the back of the newspaper, there are classified ads for music instruments, such as...
For sale, baby grand piano, never played.
This one's so dumb. Used violins, no strings attached.
And like to swing, join our jazz threesome.
The Simpsons always do the gag of when an announcement's made, they do the newspaper thing, and it's always the front page. But the fact that it's just in the back, with the Zeus. Very funny. There are also notices for the breakups of the B-sharps and Sadgasm. So there's our reference today, I guess, in the former band formation section. Covercraft is shown, listing Homer on bass, Apu on lead vocals, Reverend Lovejoy on guitar, Kirk on keyboards. Although I might have said Kirk on keyboards in my thing last week.
I think you're right.
And tambourine, though. I didn't say and tambourine. And then Hibbert on drums. Did I have Hibbert on drums, or did you have Hibbert on drums?
I don't think I did. You may have.
I thought I had Kearney on drums.
Hmm.
I think you had Wiggum on drums. Anyways, as the genre is hard driving rock, and their songs are covers.
Homer staples a flyer onto a telephone pole for their first performance at the Springfield Cabbage Festival. As he staples, he spells out R-O-K-C. Now, to be pedantic, at first when he's doing this, I thought, oh, he's right, because he goes... At first, I thought he goes left, right, right, left, so R-O-K-C would make sense, mm-hmm. because he's spelling it in order. However, he starts at the upper right, so it should he should say O-R-K-C, but either way, it's funny. I like it. So at the Cabbage Festival, there are all sorts of activities and booths, such as a cabbage dog stand, a cabbage queen, cabbage skee ball, a cabbage toss, caramel cabbages, and bumper cabbages. The stage is all set for Covercraft's debut, and Homer is hyping up the band's backstage. One member, however, is apprehensive.
This crowd is about to experience the special magic of the cover band, the thrill of live music without the fear of hearing anything new.
Hmm?
Apu, what's wrong?
What if I am no good? This is the Cabbage Festival, man. I don't know if I can face that crowd.
Hmm. Buddy, think of it this way. You're not singing in front of all those people. You're alone at the Quickie Mart in the middle of the night. You just wear this on stage and everything will be fine.
My uniform. All alone at the Quickie Mart.
Before we continue, Steve, I forgot I made this for you. It's a caramel-covered cabbage. Give it a try.
Wow, it's caramely, it's cabbagey, it's awful.
It's because caramel-covered, like, apples aren't that fun because they're hard to eat.
Exactly, yeah. They're just kind of disappointing and they'll get sticky and gross because kids are all... Yeah.
Yeah, it's like the worst. Like, even as a kid, I'm like, I don't really want that. Like, I know I'm going to make a mess. And I'm going to be like, I'm going to be just annoyed the entire time we're at the fair. Like, yeah, or carnival, wherever you're at, because it's... Yeah, my hands will be sticky.
You have to hold on to it, and it's going to get, like, bugs on it and grass and dirt, and it's just going to be awful. Ugh.
And I'm already, like, you know, growing up, I don't want, like, all my teeth to fall out. I know they're all falling out anyway, but I don't want to do it this way.
No.
But I will get money from the Tooth Fairy. Dwayne Johnson would always come into my bedroom at night.
Oh.
Put money under my pillow. Yeah. Better than the sequel with... Later, cable guy. That was just kind of creepy.
Just asked him to borrow $5.
Yeah. Anyways, so Apu looks out in the audience, sitting on blankets, waiting for their performance. He then envisions them as items for his store, in like a squishy machine, a can of Buzz Cola, a six pack of Duff, a box of salt doodles, a vat of nachos. I would want to like sit in that like a hot tub.
Yeah.
Just, can we do that? Can we get a hot tub filled with nacho cheese sauce, sit in it, and just dump chips in?
Sounds great.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? There's also like a pack of Laramie cigarettes. Band begins to play and the audience is into it. We see a montage of them playing at various events such as
the Sauerkraut Festival,
the Springfield Policeman's Ball,
the Purple Cabbage Festival,
Sideshow Mel's 45th birthday party,
the Kimchi Festival,
the Don't Text and Drive School Dance,
which is funny because it's Springfield Elementary, and the Savoy Cabbage Festival, which is happy to feature Covercraft.
All right, Steve, I'm going to ask you, which of those festivals, balls, parties, dances would you want to go to?
Well, here's the thing. I'm definitely not going to the Policeman's Ball because ACAB. I don't drive, so I have no reason to go to the Text and Drive Festival. And... all the other ones are cabbage-based, be it the the Sauerkraut Festival or the Kimchi Festival.
Can we just say how funny that this joke is? I asked, like, the Cabbage Festival is very hilarious.
Yeah, there's no reason for it, and it's just a lot of fun. But I think I'm going to go to Sideshow Mel's 45th birthday party because that just seems like a good time. You know, you've got Gabbo's there.
Yeah, Gabbo.
The whole crew of the Krusty Show. I think that'd be a fun time. There'll be plenty of drugs, I would assume, and just, yeah.
Yeah. There's something about the Springfield Policeman's Ball I think is funny because it seems like such a sitcom TV show trope. Like, oh, we're going to the Policeman's Ball. Like, there's always going to be something going on. Like, mm-hmm. Do actual policemen have balls?
Well,
I didn't mean it like that. But is that what ACAB stands for? You said that earlier. Is that all cops are balls?
Yeah, all cops are balls.
It was cute seeing Ralph in the front of the stage at the ball just dancing.
That's true, yeah.
I think the Purple Cabbage Festival, personally, I like a Purple Cabbage.
Purple Cabbage is a superior cabbage. I'll agree with that.
And Sauerkraut Festival, I'm assuming they're going to have, like, brats there, right? Or is it just sauerkraut?
I feel like you got to have brats if you're having sauerkraut.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to have, like, a bowl of sauerkraut.
And I'm not a big fan of kimchi, so I'm not going there.
Me too, yeah. It's too spicy and too pickly for me.
The Simpsons walk through Springfield, and Homer is happily recognized and greeted. Bart tells his father that everyone loves him and that he could be a famous rock star. Homer admits that he has the talent, and his mind is full of great ideas of songs that he could write down the names of and then cover. He then humbles himself, saying that he's just a regular guy jamming with his buds. Marge feels that the band is bringing out the best in Homer, and, you know, Lisa appreciates that it's all about the music for him. And Homer agrees, saying that it would take a pretty unforeseen development that changed that. And just then, in the Hollywood Hills, the Sun Gazer Studios, the band watches the best of the Cabbage Fest online, where they see Covercraft. One of the band members comments that he thinks they found just what they're looking for. So they pay a visit to the garage, car hole, of 742 Evergreen Terrace, where Homer asks his band if he was too in the pocket at the Squidport Senior Jamboree.
Freddie Freeman, Shredder Stevens, Nick Delacorte, and Peter DeBruzio? You're four of the five guys from Sungazer!
But where's your lead singer, Grant LeDavid?
He passed away.
How? What kind of erotic asphyxiation?
Apu, you're the only man on the entire internet who's got the pure Sungazer sound. Will you be our new lead singer and join us on our stadium tour?
I think I can answer for Apu. He's flattered, but the small-time success of Covercraft is all that any of us have ever wanted.
Apu
has a rich life here in Springfield. A store full of great products, a lovely hymn-type wife, and eight super kids. Anoop, Sandeep, Nabendu, Geet, Priya, Uma, Poonam, Sashi.
Shut your mouth, I want to do it. I want to do it. I want to be a singer for a real rock band.
Sungazer!
Now, at the beginning of that clip, they said Freddie Freeman. Freddie Freeman is the Los Angeles Dodgers first baseman. He's only 34 years old. Yeah. Also, Freddie Freeman is Captain Marvel Jr. in the Shazam comics.
Wow.
A lot of Freddie Freemans out there.
He's like an 8-year-old boy's ideal of a perfect person. Like, he's a superhero, a baseball player, and a rock star.
Yeah.
If you were an airline pilot, you'd be like, perfect.
Or astronaut.
Sure, yeah.
Commercial airline pilot, little kids. Like,
I've been fighter pilot.
Okay.
I'll admit that, yeah. I work for Delta.
My hero flies Spirit planes. Oh, man.
So as Apu hops on the Sungazer tour bus, Kirk admits that he's a little bit jealous of Apu's big break. Homer states that he is nothing but happy that their friend is headed for fame and fortune, and that in the sky, Apu appears in a helicopter, saying that they're playing in Vegas that night, and the theme of the casino is circus. So Homer cries out that he wants Apu's fame and fortune so much. Why must the lords of rock be so cruel? He then looks at the clouds above him and sees the heads of John Lennon, Jimi Hendrix, Jim Morrison, and one more rock star.
Sammy Hagar, you're not dead!
Damn it, I told you those jalapeno poppers had too much breading.
Sorry, Senor Hagar.
Nah, it's cool, man. I went to Rockstar Heaven, and there was this great back patio with this sweet fire pit. If you had the right wristband, which I did.
News story in aisle three. Local clerk Apu Nahasapima Petalan is a dead ringer for a dead singer. He's living the rock star dream as frontman for 80s chart toppers Sungazer on their last final Hell Refreezes Over ultimate goodbye for Sirius this time, Never Again Part 2 of Question Mark Tour. Apu and the band appeared on Saturday Night Live as the punchline in a game show sketch.
What's a game show?
Something you make sketches about.
It looks like Apu won't be playing the Cabbage Festival ever again.
I thought that joke of Sammy Hagar was pretty great. I was looking at like the dead rock stars, like, wait a minute, is that Sammy Hagar before like Homer said Sammy Hagar? Like, and then I had to look up, like, make sure he was still alive, but I forgot it was Eddie Van Halen who recently passed.
I did the exact same thing.
I was like, oh, too soon, but yeah. I mean, eventually when Sammy Hagar, who passed, when he does pass, when we watch this episode again, I'm like, oh no, Sammy's dead.
Mm-hmm.
Are you more of a Sammy Hagar or a David Lee Roth kind of guy, Steve?
Oh boy. So I'm probably more of a David Lee Roth, but here's what I've always thought about Van Halen, is that the Van Halen siblings are such good musicians. It is my belief that they were never in the right band. Like, I don't think Van Halen was ever right, because I think that they could have been kind of a serious, kind of like mythical, like Led Zeppelin style band with like really like deep lyrics and like a lot of lore with their musical proficiency. But I think with both Hagar and David Lee Roth, they're kind of more of a party band, which is fine and it's fun and it fit for the time. But I just feel like they never, like, in my opinion, never met their full potential. What do you think?
Yeah, I liked more of the David Lee Roth era, but it's a trick question, Steve. The answer is Michael Anthony.
Of course, yeah.
I think, like, just as a person, I think Sammy over David Lee Roth.
As a person, yes. As a performer, I would say the other.
Yeah, Dave was, like, a great frontman, but I think Sammy is, like, a better musician.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Okay. Besides, Sammy Hagar, he's got Cabo Wabo. All the parrot heads, like, I'll be hanging out with Sammy Hagar now that, you know, in Alcoholic Paradise.
Yeah, he's the heir to the Hawaiian shirt.
Yeah.
I want to talk about, just for a moment, the great joke about the game show sketch.
It's, like, every time I see the game show sketch on SNL, which Bart saying, like, what's a game show? It's a sketch they could do on SNL. Very funny, and it's so true. I'm not saying it's lazy writing, because we're not obviously writers on SNL, but it seems like it's one of the easier bits to do is the game show bit.
Yeah.
And I feel like when there's two game show bits on an episode of SNL, it's like, did they not work hard enough this week? I don't want to timestamp this recording podcast, but there is a recent episode with Ao Edebrey, who hosted, by the way, did an amazing job. I thought,
so good.
You know, but there was two game show sketches, and I'm like,
yeah, can we have a restaurant sketch instead?
But, I mean, SNL's been doing it for years, so it's not something new. Did, when you did the improv, was that a sketch you guys performed on stage, like a game show thing?
Very rarely, actually, surprisingly. I always ended up in a lot of marriage sketches with, like, a disappointed wife.
Was it because you were the only improv person there that actually was married and had lost their virginity and had a wife?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. Well, Homer watches the news report and angrily tosses his Cabbage Fest coleslaw. Again, just love all this Cabbage Fest bits. Lisa tells him that he shouldn't be jealous of Apu since it's all about the music. And Homer explains that he's not jealous, he's envious, saying that jealousy is when you worry someone will take what you have, while envy is wanting what someone else has. It should be on a t-shirt, Homer.
Mm-hmm.
Lisa consults her dictionary and discovers that, wow, Homer's correct. Those rare moments where Homer is correct. Love it.
Yeah. I also like Lisa just pulling out a dictionary out of nowhere.
Yeah.
So Homer then says that Apu leaving is the best thing to happen to Covercraft. They're going to be like Genesis after Peter Gabriel left. And Bart says, you mean more popular but not as good? So Homer's offended, and he asks his son if the Phil Collins era Genesis isn't as good, before citing several songs such as No Reply at All, Land of Confusion, Throwing It All Away, Illegal Alien, I Can't Dance, and, though he doesn't need to mention it, Invisible Touch.
All right, now let's go back to the Steve.
Mm-hmm.
What are you? Phil Collins' era Genesis or Pete Gabriel?
Okay, story time. I was 6 years old. I had an allowance at the time, and I saved up $10. Probably took me like 2 weeks to buy what was going to be my first ever cassette that I bought on my own. And all I wanted was a copy of I Can't Dance because I loved that song so much. Mm-hmm. So I went to the store, and I don't think I really did any research because I didn't have the internet and I was six. So I bought the first Genesis album I could find, and wouldn't you know it, it was a Peter Gabriel one, and it didn't have I Can't Dance. And I was so upset that I tried to return the tape, and they're like, no, you can't, because it's open. I'm like, but it doesn't have the song that I want. They're like, too bad. And so, yeah, exactly. So ever since then, I have been firmly on the side of Phil Collins. And I'm also a bit of a Phil Collins apologist. I think his music is great.
Yeah, that's tough. I agree. Like, Phil Collins also one of the great drummers. I'm going to agree. Points.
Thank you. And I shade to Peter Gabriel, too. Like, I think he's
I like musician. Peter. But I think we're at that same era of, like, Phil Collins. It's funny, like, my first ever cassette tape in that same soft rock genre was Paul Simon's Graceland. That was like my first ever purchase, you know, saving up $10 to buy that cassette tape. And you know what? Because of, you know, You Can Call Me Al. As a kid, I loved that music video. And guess what, Steve? I learned how to read by that age, so I knew You Can Call Me Al was on Graceland.
Well, good
you fucking
you.
Moron.
I knew how to read. I just was bad at noticing things.
Steve, did you know that the Simpsons people wanted Phil Collins on this episode?
Really?
Yeah, because they wanted to actually use the song Invisible Touch in the episode. So they want, you know, to get permission from him. And Phil Collins read the script and refused to do it and allow that song. They just wanted his permission to use that song, right? But he read the script and he's like, no, he wasn't happy with what Homer said and what Bart said. So maybe now he'll change his mind.
Maybe.
After he listens to this podcast and how we praised him. So, hey, Phil. Get your ass over to the Simpsons studio and say yes.
Yeah, figure it out. Don't live in a land of confusion.
Covercraft goes back to practicing, but they stop as something feels off. Dr. Hibbert suggests they could use a new lead singer. Kirk Van Houten reminds them that he's been known to sing a little, and Homer's skeptical.
What? So you could also get famous and bail on us? You're out of the band!
Well, you can't just kick him out.
Oh, so you're sticking up for Yoko here! Looks like I got another Yoko on my hands.
How can there be two Yokos?
Yoko! 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 All you Yokos are out of the band!
Are you okay?
Do I sound okay?
You sound great. Your licks are really juicy.
They're not juicy. My licks are dry. Dry and scratchy like a cat's tongue.
You didn't join a band to become famous like an almost famous. You love playing music with your friends. That was enough to make you happy.
Well, it's not enough anymore. When something great happens to one person, everyone else's life gets a little worse. Look it up. It's called physics.
Apu is a good man. He sent over front row tickets and backstage passes to a show at the Kensington Center.
Now, I know it's not joke gel. Maybe it could be like joke reference. But can we stop with the blaming someone breaking up and call them the Yoko?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a little tired.
It's tired, but it's also like not true.
Mm-hmm.
Yoko Ono didn't break up the Beatles. And is it also like maybe a little sexist, right? Oh, because there was a woman involved?
Yeah.
Paul McCartney and Ringo have like stated many times that like, no, that, you know, well, Paul specifically has stated that Yoko didn't break up with the band. They were already like on their way out.
Right.
You know, they had only been together for like a couple years, but they did so much work and like, they were still young kids too, you know?
Yeah.
And people change. Like when you're in your 20s, you're definitely a different person in your 20s than you are when you're in your 40s. Like I'm not the same guy I was when I was 21 that I am now as 41, right?
Right, exactly.
So the Beatles broke themselves up. You know, Paul wanted to go in a different direction. John wanted to go in a different direction. Yoko was not the issue. So like, let's stop using the Yoko Ono excuse, all right?
Just step back and think about how the Beatles were basically a pop group that like became a conceptual geniuses and then released a million out or like so many good albums in like the span of like 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so to quit while you're ahead and then go on to do other things that were also great, like everybody had a great solo career, or, you know, like Wings is amazing. John Lennon had a bunch of good stuff. Like they were fine. And yeah, I hate that kind of derisiveness over Yoko.
Yeah. So other than that, this episode's, I've been enjoying it. But yeah, that's the Yoko factor. We're done with it, Steve.
Yeah, I agree. So Homer sarcastically suggests that Apu generously invited them to watch him be a rock star. Marge tells Homer to stop feeling sorry for himself. Apu had a wonderful thing happen to him, and he should come see his talent. Homer complains that he'll never have a per diem, but Marge reminds him that he doesn't even know what a per diem is, but Homer still wants one.
What's our per diem?
Five?
That's a good question. No, like, you know, only green M&Ms, that kind of bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
It's getting late in the show, but I don't know if we really I would have one at this point. Off the spot, I can't really think of one. Probably something like, you know, a whiskey, a beer, some sort of alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I wouldn't want to eat anything before a show because I don't want to, like, the grumblies, but I also don't want to, like, be lethargic if I eat something. So no food, probably just some whiskey. Maybe if there was food, it would just be like cucumbers, some carrot sticks, just like a veggie tray. Like, yeah, something very simple. Yeah. Nothing like a sandwich. No carbs.
Maybe just some sparkling water or something for me.
And then 3 to 4 hookers with cocaine on their breasts.
Of course. Yeah. That's And Fabergé egg. Scrambled.
Two. Yeah, scrap it. Damn it. Yeah, scrap it. Okay. Well, at the Costigan Center, the Simpsons arrive with a gold parking pass, and they drive into the state auditorium, parking next to the audience. And at first, I'm thinking, like, this is genius. I just, like, go to a concert with that pass and just park and just watch it like a drive-in. But no, they park the car in the stadium, and then a little golf cart comes up to them. And then just, like, a matter of, like, a few feet, they drop them off. The cart drops him off in front of the stage. But, like, Homer's still just, mad.
Yeah.
But, the cart just, like, stops in the first seat for Homer and then drives a little bit further.
Yeah.
For Lisa and Marge and Bart, yeah. Well, Homer is, like, muttering to himself that Apu wouldn't be able to sing a note if he didn't help him get over his stage fright with his Quickie Mart t-shirt. He then looks at his backstage pass, or should he say, payback rage pass, and concocts a devious plan, and Homer goes to Apu's dressing room and notices all the amenities, calling Apu a sellout. He's got a cheese plate, but not just any cheese plate. It's a cube cheese plate. It looks like it's just some cheddar and probably maybe a mozzarella. It's just a white cheese. It's probably like a white cheddar. It's probably just two cheddars. And on the wall, there's a framed photo of the B-sharps, which I like that.
Yes.
But he doesn't notice it, but Homer notices the lemon tea, most likely for Apu's throat. He then opens the closet to find Apu's Quickie Mart shirt and goes to steal it when someone comes to the door.
Let's see how he performs in front of all those people without his magic people performing in front of shirt.
But Mr. Shredder, you promised me after we played my hometown, I could have a day off.
I also promised I'd kick heroin.
Hmm? But the tour is so hard on my family. My octuplets are being raised by roadies and bodyguards. This is not proper.
Look, Apu, for 25 years, we wasted money on women, drugs, and guitars with live fish inside. And now, we want to keep it going.
You signed a contract for a 3-year, 57-country tour at union scale. No per diem. You're in the band.
Oh, well, guess it's showtime. Homer?
I'm sorry, Apu. I thought you were living your dream life, so naturally I wanted to ruin it. But now I know things stink, so I'm okay with it.
Oh, what is the point? I'm trapped like a Quickie Mart hot dog on a roller.
Quickie Mart hot dog, eh?
I like when Apu mentions that his kids are being raised by roadies, and then we see a cutaway of them, and there's a couple of his kids like playing poker. It's fun.
Yeah. Sanjay receives a call at the Quickie Mart asking for every hot dog. He loads up the ones that are on the roller. the one in Comic Book Guy's hands, the one in the mop bucket, and even the wiener that's stuffed inside the toilet paper roll in the bathroom. He then presents them to the members of Sungazer, who are happy to receive the two meet. It's also the first time that we heard Sanjay speak since I'm with Cupid.
Well, back on stage, the announcer says that the show is presented by Tux Medicated Pads for welcoming Sungazer. As the crowd cheers, Apu walks on stage alone, saying that all of his original members of the band have been struck down by a mysterious case of hot dog poisoning. He adds that rather than refunds or rescheduling, which is what you should do, he says he's got a very special surprise for the crowd. He then welcomes a group who is truly all about the music, Covercraft.
I think I'd be pissed, honestly.
Yeah, right.
So they play Hoping for a Dream, and the crowd goes wild. Marge dances, embarrassing Bart and Lisa. Reverend Lovejoy and Homer jam back-to-back. Dr. Hibbert drums in his underpants. And the members of Stargazer anguish in their dressing room, regretting the hot dogs, while Chief Wiggum uses forensic to get to the bottom of the poisoning. He then arrests Homer and Apu, and the original members play Still Sick. The keyboard player even pukes into his wig. Meanwhile, Sanjay gets intimate with several groupies. And then we see Stig from Guitar Center giving Martin Prince guitar lessons and kind of looking annoyed by it. And then Homer and Pooh sing Hoping for a Dream in lockup, and the credits begin to roll. But before we go, let's visit them, Mo, King Toot, and the Red Rocker himself, who are all, coincidentally, sharing a prison cell.
So there I am on Easter Island, and the Heads asked me to play them a song. I say, why me, Heads? You've heard the music of the universe itself. And they say, Sammy, your stuff rocks just a little harder. That's when I wake up. I'm in the Springfield Elementary parking lot, doing a buck 55 in my Ferrari 512 Boxer. I was cornering so hard, I blacked out from the G's, man. They say I ran over the groundskeeper. Probably get life in prison, but I got a plan to escape, using only this harmonica and some guitar picks with my face on them. Who's with me on this?
And then as you see them, he's ranting, all of them just like kind of come together like, yeah, we're in on this.
Let's do it.
That's good. Good acting, voice acting on Sammy Hagar there. Like,
yeah.
And also like being part of like being the butt of the joke. That's good sport of him. That's why I think Sammy Hagar. I mean, you haven't seen David Lee Roth make an appearance on The Simpsons, right?
That's true.
All right. I also want to say that it's weird like watching the band, right? Like you see backstage or like because the stage is kind of like in the middle of the arena, but like there's still usually when there's like a band, right, that has a concert in a stadium like that, there's like one side that is blocked off because you have the stage there where, you know, the seats, like if you're on a like a court, like the stadium is for like basketball, hockey, whatever.
Yeah.
But the seats behind the stage, there's a lot of people sitting them. So like they're just seeing the back of a curtain.
That's true. That is,
it seems like weird.
Bad seats.
Yeah. Those like had to be cheap.
Yeah, I would hope so.
All right. Well, Steve, I think we need to settle down and take a little break and come back and give a final discussion on this episode.
Sounds great.
All right. We'll be right back.
Hoping for a dream.
Hoping.
Focus like a laser beam. I'll keep fighting till I want something red. Hoping for a dream.
And we're back. All right, Steve, let's wrap up this week's episode of Covercraft. We'll talk about some of our favorite scenes, some favorite jokes, maybe give an MBJ, Most Valuable Jokester. We'll give a nice little review, give it a ranking, find out what we're watching next week. But before we do all that, Steve, we like to give gifts, specifically something from this episode that we thought would make a great gift. And yes, there's a lot of things that I want to give you. You know, lately, I've been kind of giving you crappy stuff, but this one, It's because I've been saving up money, Steve. I'm giving you a lot of stuff. So that's why the last couple of weeks you've been getting dick, really. not really dick, but
no.
You're getting crap. And I thought, I want you to pick up the bass again. So I got you a new bass, but this one has a live fish in it. It's a fish tank bass.
Ooh, fancy. I love it.
Yeah. And then you're going to need a place to play your bass with your pals. And no, I'm not getting you a new garage or a car hole.
No.
But I got you this deed to Zers. That's right. You're the proud owner of a appetizer restaurant. And I had them install a stage so you can perform live music there.
Wow. That's
people
great.
Eat their Zers. Yeah. And last, but not least, well, here. I found this trombone in the dumpster. So that's your third gift.
Ah, thanks.
Yeah.
You shouldn't have.
I know. And one more gift. Oh. One more gift. You get, whenever we go on live tours, you get this backstage pass.
Wow.
For our show. For our show. Yeah. So you get to meet me finally.
Wow. That's great.
We're full disclosure, off pod, Steve and I don't talk to each other. We only talk when we record. So we're those kind of artists. Yeah. We'll have our own separate dressing rooms. Like, I won't talk to you until we get out on stage. So we're performers. That's just it.
Yeah. Is it okay if I give my backstage pass to Timothy? Because he's never met you, and I think he'd like that. So,
well, Steve, haven't you thought it's a little weird that you've met Timothy, but I've never been in the same room as Timothy?
Whoa.
Yeah. Think about it. We're the same person.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's very confusing to me because he's like 3 feet taller than you, but.
Well, you know, it's, have you ever seen your wife, Laura, and me in the same room? No, because we're doing the kids walking into the adult video store. So she's the legs and I'm the top. Yeah.
Okay. That makes sense.
I shouldn't be saying that about your wife that I'm the top and she's the bottom.
Everybody knows that I'm the bottom.
Yes. All right, Steve. Happy episode presents.
Thank you. For you, Craig, I know you're a big hockey fan, so I got you a new sweater from the Quebec Nordiques, as well as some gift certificates, so you can get your own brand new Gibson from Guitar Central. You can go to Sprawl Mart, which it may not be Walmart, but it's got plenty of stuff. You can get some Just Linens from Just Linens, etc., and some Pets and Lamps from Pets and Lamps. And then you can stop it off and get some toys, which I know that you really want, at Toys Be This and Babies Be That.
I'm going to buy all the real Ghostbusters action figures, and I'm going to get the Firehouse and the Ecto-1, and the like football player one that has.
Oh, yeah.
And the toilet, the old lady one. And the Ghostbusters where you squeeze their arms and their faces
their
popped
arm
out.
Up. Yep, yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fun toys.
Those are the cool ones, yeah. What a great present segment for both of us this week, right?
I think so, yeah.
It kind of sounds like we're having fun with this. The last couple episodes, we've been kind of sour and maybe annoyed because we're the Annoyed Grump Boys. But that's just me. That's just me projecting right now. I don't know about you. Was there some scenes, jokes in this episode that did make you laugh?
Oh, boy. I loved King Toot. He was a lot of fun. I love that he and Mo are this, like, adversaries. And that kind of, like, Mo is kind of not the dirtbag in the situation. Like, he's normally scum, but King Toot kind of seems more scummy. I love the joke about the Guitar Central being some sort of guitar center. The Ken Brockman report about how game shows are a thing that you make sketches about. But this is just a fun episode. I really liked Sammy Hagar. I thought he was, like, really game and a lot of fun. I think my favorite joke might be the baby piano never played, because that's a take on the old short story, for sale baby shoes never worn, because that's just such a dark joke.
Yeah.
And this is a lot of fun. MVJ, most valuable jokester. Oh, I think I'm going to give it to Homer, mostly for his love of Phil Collins' era Genesis and his knowledge of jealousy versus envy. So, yeah. What about
you, Homer, right? Homer really shined in this outing. The SNL game show sketch joke was definitely the top joke of the night. I'll give it to that one. And the cabbage festival stuff was great.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, the newspaper headlines. You talking about the baby piano, never played joke, but I still like the used violins, no strings attached, and of course the like to swing twinner jazz threesome. The store names, again, just a lot of fun and all the festivals. So MBJ, yeah, it's hard not to make it Homer. Sammy Hagar as a guest. I've been giving a lot of guests the MBJs this past couple episodes, but I'll give it to Homer. He was a little bit of jerkass, but a little bit smart, which I always like when his intelligence comes through in episodes. So we'll go with good old Homer there. All right, so what did you think of the episode in general?
It was just nothing short of a blast. From beginning to end, just a lot of fun. I know that people might quibble about the references of previous episodes with them being in bands and other people being musicians. In fact, I saw that the Den of Geek gave it a 2.5 out of 5 stars because of the missed opportunity about referencing previous episodes where they're musicians. But they did. I mean, you had the Saggasm and B-sharps in the paper. You had the B-sharps on Apu's dressing room wall. And even Kirk saying that he used to be something of a songwriter himself and a singer because he could have the Kinabaro feeling. So they know that they've done stuff like this before. And I don't know if it's just our age or what, but like the idea of them joining a dad band and doing covers, it's a lot of fun. Fun is the episode, in a word. I just really enjoyed all of it. And as a former bassist, I thought that him taking it with ease is great. No flaws whatsoever. So if I had to give this ranking, you know, it featured the Red Rocker and he famously cannot drive 55. So I'm going to give this a 53 out of 55, 2 points knocked off for the Yoko Ono bashing.
It's probably because you would have given a perfect score until I brought the Yoko bit up.
It might be your fault.
You were talking about the Den of Geek, giving it a 2.5 and saying like, you could have referenced this and this. And like, that's kind of like how our podcast, sometimes we talk about that. Like, why did they do this? And we touched upon it a little bit. Mm-hmm. But that's also like when you start referencing things and doing callbacks, then reviewers are also pissed about that. Like, you're referencing things too much. Any original, tell your own story. You know, exactly. On paper, this episode, when, you know, we're looking at it, like, it sounds shitty. Like, everything about it, it's like, oh, this kind of story, that we don't need to see it. But I think the execution in this episode was all perfectly well done.
Yeah.
The jokes all hit, the goofy, you know, gags of the light gels and then the Zers restaurant, like, title cards that come up. The cabbage, all that cabbage festival bits. And then just, like, the little things that, if you can relate to, like, the music stuff, like the Guitar Center stuff, which, of course, I can. So that's why I probably favor this episode, too, is because there's a lot of things in this episode that I can relate to. And I think any dude, you know, in middle school wanted to start a band because, mm-hmm. one, that's, you want... You're not good at sports, so maybe you could be good at a musical instrument because that is a way to get girls, you know?
Right, exactly.
That's all the only reason you start a band.
Mm-hmm.
And which I guess they didn't really touch upon because the funny thing is they're all married, and I think that's kind of an ingenious way of making sure all the dudes in the band were all married.
Yeah.
So they can not have that bit. And if you look at it, too, like Matt Selman did write that 90s show, which of course is the controversial episode, which I think we weren't too much fans of that even after reviewing it. But this episode, I think, stands out to be a really good Selman episode. And looking at the episodes that we reviewed, the next episode that he writes for season 26 is Sky Police, which is also, I think, a really good episode. So
yeah,
the era of season 26 Selman, batting two for two here. I think season 26 has been one of his two best episodes.
I think so. I think you're totally right. I mean, he does take a little dip in season 28 with The Great Gatsby Part 2, but I think for now, he's riding strong.
That's not his fault. He's trying to fix The Great Gatsby Part 1 by like, all right, well, I have to like adhere to Part 1.
That's true.
If I gave this a ranking, look, we got Sammy Hagar here. He did for studio albums for Van Halen. There was four. You had 5150. Then you had OUB18 for Unlawful Carnal Knowledge. And then Balance. Balance was what? That was... I can't give it a Balance because that album cover always creeped me out when I was a kid.
Because
It was like the two little kids like joined together at the like teeter-totter. And so like, every time like the Columbia House music thing for like the penny came and I saw that album, I'm like, no, that's creepy. I don't want that.
Very relatable memory.
Yeah. So you got to really think like 5150 and OUB 812 is, they're the two of the better of the Hagar era. I'm giving this episode a 5150.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Well, Steve, I'm surprised that we both like this one, because I honestly thought like I was going to like this over you. I thought you'd be like, eh, not into it.
See, I thought the same, but for you. Like, I thought, I thought it was fun, but you might like be like, oh, the rock stuff is too whatever. But no, I thought this was like a great episode.
After the last couple episodes, you know, it becomes where they're little clunkers and you keep doing this. You're like, all right, well, is this going to be a stinker? But no, this is a great episode. It's a lot of fun. I recommend it. Stop trying to put nostalgia things into things, and they didn't. Like, it's its own thing. And yes, we all know that Lisa plays the sax, Bard does the, you know, let this be its own story. And they did. I don't need the callbacks like Den of Geek said. So take that, Den of Geek. Steve, let's find out what we're watching next week, okay?
All righty. And to do that, we're going to need that good old wheel of random. Let's give it a spin to see which season we're in. Boop.
Steve, we have season 12.
Ooh, season 12. Going back. Alrighty, let's give it another spin to see which episode we are a watching. Boop.
Episode 15.
Season 12, episode 15.
I can give you some clues.
Okay.
If you'd like. Well, your first clue is it aired March 4th, 2001. We're like a couple months into the greatest president of all time, George W. Bush. A few months away from that horrible, horrible day in September when Glitter came out. The Mariah Carey movie.
Yeah, it's awful. The national tragedy.
If you need another hint, this one's going to be the big one, Steve.
Ooh.
I'm very excited because do you want to know who the writer of the episode was?
I sure do.
He's our favorite.
Tim Long?
The most popular man on The Simpsons. Yeah, that's right. It's a man on The Simpsons writing staff. The most personable one, too. Like, just loves to talk to people, do interviews, make appearances everywhere. You know what I'm talking about, Steve.
Oh, yeah.
Mr. John Swartzwelder wrote this episode.
Ooh. So, this is interesting because it is a season 12. So that's kind of later in, it's one of probably his later or last episodes that he's written that we know of.
Could be.
It's hard to figure out what that could be.
Unfortunately, you were supposed to give me a fake title first before the real title, but now you got like two big hints there. So now you could just think of all the Schwartzwelder ones, or you could just give me a silly title still.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go for a silly title because I don't know. So I'm going to say that I know that he likes to do wacky things, and I also know that he has a penchant for old-timely homeless people. So I'm going to say the title of this episode is Lobo the Hobo Werewolf.
And you really think that's a title of a Schwartzwelder episode?
Sure, why not?
It's not.
I wish it was.
It's based off of a very popular children's game, Hungry Hungry Homer. Steve, what's this episode about? You know this episode, right?
So, full disclosure, that title rings with me because I know that Homer goes on a hunger strike because of a baseball team. And the only reason that I know this, and I don't think it's qualified because I got information just coincidentally on TikTok, because it affected real life in a way that we'll talk about next week about a real baseball team. And somebody just happened to bring that up on TikTok coincidentally like last week. And I happened to see something about it. So it's fresh in my mind, but I barely remember this episode. So
can you just give us a funny description with a B plot as well?
Yeah. So,
for the fans.
Yeah, of course. Homer's appetite is insatiable. So he goes on a food tour across the country trying to eat a hamburger from every state. Meanwhile, in the B plot, Bart wants to avoid school, so he hops in the trunk of the car that Homer's in and tries to Krusty brand yo-yos from every state because it's a contest, because much like the state quarters, Krusty released a yo-yo for every state. And so Bart is trying to get a yo-yo for every state, but Homer doesn't know that Bart is in the trunk of the car until they're in Lansing, Michigan, and Homer drives off having his hamburger and leaves Bart behind, and he has to join the Detroit Lions as a quarterback.
Steve, you realize your whole fake description was longer than our actual podcast episodes?
I do, yeah.
Okay. Sorry about that. Well, I'll keep it short and simple here. You're wrong, and it's as a result of becoming a Good Samaritan, Homer discovers that Springfield Isotopes baseball team are planning to move to Albuquerque, so he decides to go on a hunger strike, but how long will it last? How long indeed? Probably a lot shorter than our podcast.
I think so. Maybe about 21 minutes.
Yeah. Well, Steve, I had a lot of fun this week. I'm excited for next week, especially since it's Schwartzwelder.
Yeah.
Hey, let us know what you guys thought. Contact us on social media, Instagram, YouTube at 13Simpsons, or you can email us at 13Simpsons@gmail.com.
And hey, if you're so kind, go to your favorite podcasting app, leave us 5 stars or the equivalent, but you don't need to write a real review. Just tell us what band that you would cover if you were in a cover band. And hey, while you're there, click on the microphone, leave us a voicemail, ask us a question, give us an order, or just do your best impression of Sammy Hagar.
And check out our TeePublic site, teepublic.com/user/annoyedgruntboys, for some merch. All right, for this week, I've been Annoyed Grunt Boy Craig.
And I've been Annoyed Grunt Boy Steve.
And remember, all your licks are juicy.
You call that a testicle kick?